I'm Laura Palmer, host of Island Crime. Season 6, Sweethearts, is the story of three teenage girls who were all murdered in Victoria, Canada, within about 12 months.
So she was scared. Something out there scared her.
You've just created the playground where predators can really thrive.
She was a 16-year-old girl. She was a sweetheart.
Listen to Sweethearts at frequencypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get podcasts.
Find your frequency.
One of the most fascinating things about the internet and about social media in particular is how it can create combinations of industries you'd never have imagined. And it can turn those combinations into viable businesses and lucrative careers. And stumble right into a cesspool of ethical issues in the process. All of that is to say welcome to the world of Instagram surgeons. These doctors are influencers and not necessarily in their fields of study. They have mastered the art of turning their cosmetic surgery practices into viral content, and one of their elite practices here in Canada. They have hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of followers. They show before and after photos of breast augmentations and tummy tucks and butt lifts. But they also show the surgeries themselves.
So what we're going to do is we're going to bring this point there, close it up. Then we're going to bring the belly button together. And she's going to have a little vertical line. Sometimes we'll have a little vertical line.
In graphic detail, while they narrate the procedures, and sometimes while they comment on the people they're working on. They do this, they say, with the consent of their patients. Except not all of those patients see it that way. And that's where the story begins. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Catherine Laidlaw is a reporter based in Toronto who investigated the world of The Real Dr. Six for Wired magazine. Hello, Catherine.
Hi.
Why don't you start for people who don't pay attention to the world of Instagram cosmetic surgery. Who is The Real Dr. Six?
Yeah, so The Real Dr. Six is a man named Martin Eugenberg. He's a doctor, plastic surgeon, who lives in Toronto, and he operates out of a clinic that's located in the Royal York Hotel. Some of your listeners might know it's a pretty iconic building in the city, and he has had a rough couple of years in his practice, I would say. He's been investigated by the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Ontario for unprofessional conduct, and he's also facing a proposed class action lawsuit from some of his former patients who are unhappy with how he has treated them while they've been in the clinic or how he's used their images on his social media presence, which is quite active. So he's quite active on Instagram under the handle Real Dr. Six and also on Snapchat, where he posts before and after photos and also films live surgeries and posts them in all their sort of unflinching detail.
Can you maybe describe a little bit more for those of us who haven't seen it, what his Instagram and Snapchat are like? Like, what's the tone? What kinds of stuff does he do? All that stuff.
Yeah. So, the tone varies a little bit, and I think that's part of where some of the issues in this story come up. But he says that he intends the tone to be educational, transparent, authentic look at what plastic surgery can really do, and that includes both the success stories and then also the limits of the industry. He'll post sort of side-by-side pictures of celebrities analyzing the kind of work that they may have had done. He'll post memes sometimes. He'll sort of do instructional videos sometimes about different types of breast implants that people could consider, what he'd recommend. He does Q&As with other surgeons, one of whom calls himself Dr. Miami, and he's quite famous for sort of spearheading this social media approach in the industry. He will also sort of do happy patient posts, which is when he posts sort of selfies or after photos of his patients displaying their different body parts in ways that they are happy with, you know, a picture of like a particularly etched set of abs on a torso, or, you know, even just yesterday there was, he'd done a tummy tuck procedure for a woman who'd had children and posted sort of quite an artistic actually photo of her that she had posted to Instagram as well. So there's a real range, but you really sort of get a sense of his personality and what he's aiming for in his practice.
You mentioned Dr. Miami and other surgeons who do this. Can you explain a little bit about the rise of this style of surgeon and, you know, where they came from and how did Dr. Miami begin it?
Down in Florida, there is a doctor named Michael Salzhauer. He calls himself Dr. Miami and has for years. And back in sort of 2014, like, he was very, very early adopter of Instagram and has a big, vibrant, flamboyant personality, and so was using social media to sort of show both that side of things. And then also, he really wanted to sort of dispel some of the myths, I think, that had sprung up around plastic surgery, cosmetic surgery, and some of the stigma, I think, as well. And so he was actually, as far as I know, the first plastic surgeon to use Instagram to show live surgeries. And it really caught on. Like, at first, he sort of got 1,000 followers, then a couple thousand. And by the time he had gotten to 90,000 followers, that was in early 2015, Instagram shut his account down for nudity content. So his 15-year-old daughter, who is his eldest, suggested that he try Snapchat because that's what all her friends were doing. And it really stuck. So he decided he would hire a social media manager. Around that same time, he hired a couple, and his following exploded, and it's now over 1 million. And they just started really, really having fun with it. Like, I would say Dr. Miami's content is sort of like the most outrageous of Dr. Six's content all the time. Like, they've had rappers come into the OR, like, comment as Dr. Miami is performing surgery. He, like, breaks out into dance in the OR. They play trap music. He's done, I think, different partnerships with, like, different musicians. He's been in music videos. Hmm. He's faced some degree of controversy. During the pandemic, he was doing, like, drive-by Botox injections. Like, he...
What?
yeah. Like, it's... He's really known for, like, he's become a character in and of himself, if that makes sense. And so,
okay.
What he and his social media coordinators decided to do was start a consulting business. Like, maybe if there was this much interest in his work, there would be interest in other surgeons' work. Like, maybe this was a model that he could sell not just to his patients, but to his colleagues. And Martin Eugenberg was one of his earlier clients. They'd met at a conference. Eugenberg had also been a really early adopter of the internet in various ways, even back in med school. And so I think when he saw what Dr. Miami was doing, he was really intrigued by the possibility of reaching so many people. And so he went down to Miami, paid for a training session, and then also pays for ongoing social media promotion on Dr. Miami's platforms. And there are, I believe it's 15 right now. There's a group of 15 surgeons, and they call themselves the Dr. Miami squad. There's one in Long Island, one in Baltimore, different. There's one in San Francisco, and they all have these sort of names like Dr. Be Fixing, Dr. Feel Good, things like that. And they have sort of t-shirts made with their emojis all gathered in a group and things like this. Like, it's a very branded thing, I want to say. And so they're all sort of performing this way on social media, as well as being doctors, being surgeons.
So far, this all sounds strange and maybe a little weird, but above board and just an interesting way to approach cosmetic surgery. But we should just start with you kind of telling me the stories of a couple of his patients that you talked to get a sense of where these problems kind of come from.
Maybe I'll start with a woman that I talked to named Sarah. She was a personal trainer. And once she sort of passed the age of 40, she found that she was feeling really insecure about the way her midsection looked, that the exercise that she used to sort of be able to stay fit with wasn't working as well. And that was maybe a result of aging. And so she gave it a lot of thought and she decided that she would do liposuction, but she felt really, I don't know if ashamed of that choice, but she deeply wanted to keep it private. She told her husband and her best friend and no one else that she was even having this surgery. And so when the clinic asked her if she'd give permission to have them shoot it and display it on social media channels, she said no, because it was counter to sort of the entire ethos that she was approaching this with. So she went through consultation process, she paid for the surgery. And then when she was in pre-op, heading into the operating room, and I mean, I think I've never had major invasive surgery, but liposuction is a major invasive surgery. And I sort of tried to imagine what my state of mind would be going into a surgery. And they asked her before the surgery started if she'd reconsider social media, and she acquiesced. And she just said that she wanted them to cover her face. And so when she woke up, she was groggy and thinking about whether or not they'd actually shown her face on the Instagram stories. So she watched it and she said it was horrifying to hear her doctor sort of banter about her body with his social media assistant while she was on the table unconscious. He sort of commented on the elasticity that her skin likely would never have again, and that she was tanned, and tanning was one of the worst things you could do for your skin. She felt totally embarrassed. He had her sliced open on the table. Why was he also sort of body shaming her at the same time? And I think she deeply regretted saying yes in that moment. In another instance, a woman I spoke to, Laura, found that he had used one of her personal Instagram photos to sort of display like one of his happy patient testimonials. And she asked him to take it down. And she says that he refused to do that. Another story, a woman that I spoke to who we called Anna in the story. She went in for a follow-up appointment, and he, in her recollection, sort of used that appointment as a way of educating his followers, but really didn't give her any care or attention. And she was angered by that. And so those are just three of a couple hundred stories that have come out now.
So there is a pattern here.
Yeah. I mean, in my view, there is. And in speaking with, you know, more patients than just the three that we focused on in the story. Definitely there's a pattern of what I would say, maybe prioritizing performance over care is, I think, how a lot of these patients felt.
Do we have an idea how common that is? And I'm not asking for like, oh, what percentage or anything, but are these concerns and complaints being made about Dr. Eugenberg? Is this something that has happened to, you know, Dr. Miami or the rest of, what is it, the Dr. Miami squad?
That's a good question. So I know that Dr. Miami has come under a little bit of fire from his own regulatory body, but it wasn't because of a patient concern, it was because of a music video that he did that they considered unprofessional conduct. And that was some years ago. That said, I think one thing that does make a difference here is that the other members of the Dr. Miami squad are operating in the States.
Right.
They have different rules, different regulations, and allow sort of more, let's say, like creativity in those respects. But I am not aware of any other issues with informed consent with those doctors and those patients. And that's not something that is different in Canada and the States. And so, yeah, I think we see a pattern with this clinic of issues of consent coming up, certainly.
So what happens next to adjudicate this? And what has Dr. Eugenberg said in his defense? Because, you know, it's a really interesting question. On the one hand, everything that you've just described sounds really sleazy, like at best. On the other hand, they did all sign those waivers, right?
Yes. And I do think part of what has made this story take up so much real estate in my head is the fact that on the one hand, you have a group of patients who say that they didn't feel like they could truly give consent, or they didn't feel like there was really an option. And on the other hand, you have a doctor who says he's operating with these values of like educating people on the limits of what's possible and wanting to show what real bodies look like rather than these like photoshopped images that we are force fed in all these other ways. And like, I do think that on its face, the idea of educating people about authenticity in physicality is a good thing for society. I'm just not sure that that's what's actually happening here. And so two things are going on. One is that a couple of years ago now, a journalist posed as a patient and went to the clinic in the Royal York as part of a story about breast implant marketing. She visited a few different clinics, and this was one of them. And she noticed that there was a surveillance camera in a room where she was told to take her clothes off. She reported it, and the College of Physicians and Surgeons started an investigation. And then while that was going on, they also investigated another allegation from another reporter, actually, that Dr. Eugenberg had allowed a film crew to shoot a patient's procedure without her consent, and the footage of her body aired on TV. And 9 months after that surgery happened, Eugenberg added a line to her chart saying she had consented. And so this past summer, there was a disciplinary hearing that dealt with those two allegations. So the way that those are adjudicated in Ontario is that a panel of your peers, a panel of doctors, hears the case and delivers a verdict. So they found that Eugenberg engaged in professional misconduct, but haven't meted out a penalty yet. That's happening actually in a few days on February 1st. In the civil court realm, this proposed class action lawsuit, there's a hearing in April before a judge will decide if there is enough evidence in the case to move it forward. And usually what they're looking for in those types of cases is a pattern. I do know that more than 200 patients have come forward since last November when they announced that they were looking at filing an action. And so I will be watching to see what happens. But in terms of consequence, we don't know yet.
Would any of those consequences include losing his right to practice? I'm just trying to get a sense of the stakes for him right now.
For sure. So the CPSO, which is the regulatory body that had the disciplinary hearing, that is a possibility. And it would be them who would revoke that license from him. I'm not sure that that's going to be the penalty in this case. That has tended to happen in really, really severe cases, at least that I'm aware of in Ontario. For example, a doctor in Ottawa who, you know, inseminated his patients with his own sperm at a sperm clinic, he got his license revoked. But certainly it would be within their power. And, you know, penalties can range from fines to temporary license suspension to restrictions on what someone is able to do in their practice to, yeah, having their license revoked. And so I think he's probably not sure how that's going to go. And this week is not necessarily going to decide that. Like at the penalty hearing, both sides sort of present what they think would be a fair penalty, and then the panel takes more time to actually render a decision. And so that I think will likely happen sometime in the spring. But at least on February 1st, we should have a sense of what consequence both sides think is a fair one.
Last question. Has this doctor's social media behavior changed at all since these problems began piling up? I guess this coincides with the pandemic because he's probably not doing surgeries now too. But is there any acknowledgement of, you know, the way, at the very least, some of his patients were reacting to the kinds of stuff he was doing?
No. And that was something that surprised me. So I started working on the story last January and started what I would call sort of like an intensive year-long study of social media presence of this doctor in this clinic. And the only change that I noticed is that occasionally now below photos, he will post that the patient consented to their photo being shared. And aside from that, it has continued business as totally normal, pandemic aside. I will say, so he is operating now. He has received the COVID vaccine.
Really?
Yep. He Instagrammed that experience.
That's a whole other podcast on how he got the vaccine.
Yeah, I mean, he has hospital privileges at Humber River. So the clinic is open, and he has continued to film surgeries. He is doing consultations virtually now. So there have been certainly some changes to his practice, but the social media presentation has sort of continued apace. He certainly hasn't addressed any of the like legal or disciplinary proceedings on social media, but I mean, that's not entirely surprising to me. I would think that would be extremely ill-advised. But I do remember sort of thinking like, that's so strange that it seems like nothing has changed. And I think at the end of the story, in the magazine story that I wrote, I flick at that a little bit, where he's sort of presenting himself as being the one who's doing the most authentic work when there's all of this stuff behind the scenes that you would never know if you were just following him on social media.
Catherine, thank you for taking us inside this very strange world. And I guess we'll see what happens in February.
For sure. Thank you.
Catherine Laidlaw, writing for Wired magazine. That was The Big Story. For more from us, head to thebigstorypodcast.ca. Every single episode we have ever done can be found there. There are more than 600 of them by now. You can also talk to us on Twitter at TheBigStoryFPN. You can email us, TheBigStoryPodcast, that's all one word, all lowercase, at rci.rogers.com. Don't send any pictures of your cosmetic surgery. I cannot watch those videos. I got so squeamish just researching this story. And as always, we're in your podcast feed, Apple or Google or Stitcher or Spotify, you pick. Find us, rate us, review us, tell your friends, you know the deal. Claire Broussard, Ryan Clark, and Stephanie Phillips produce The Big Story. Annalisa Nielsen is our digital editor. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. Stay safe this weekend, stay warm, and we'll talk on Monday.